Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube. Come get some.
Beware, IGN Games Coop.
How do you feel about when they kick the gnomes in Golden Axe?
Oh, I think gnome kicking is nice one. Gnomes are assholes, and we should beat them.
Here we go.
You heard it here.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN Game Scoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week, Justin Davis,
Scoop.
Jared Petty,
gnomes.
Sam Claiborne,
the Scoop Gnomes.
Got a great show for you this week. We're going to talk about Dragon Age Tactics. We're going to talk about Mirror's Edge. But first, PAX East is coming up in a couple months. Myself and a few other IGNers are going to be there, and we are having an IGN panel. So if you are attending PAX East, you are required to attend the IGN panel. Saturday evening, April 23rd, 7 p.m. in the Dragonfly Theater. Myself, Brian Altano, Marty Sliva, Ryan McCaffrey, at least, will all be there. We look forward to seeing you. If you can't make it, we'll be live streaming the panel on Twitch at the same time. So
mandatory.
Yep.
Attendance is mandatory.
I know you don't have anything better to do on a Saturday night than watch four idiots talk about video games.
Saturday night.
Yeah.
BYOB.
BYOB, for sure. Let's get to this week's news. Mirror's Edge. Mm-hmm. Catalyst.
Whoa.
Is out in about 3 months.
Oh, is that true?
What's your read on this upcoming video game?
I think I played it with you at E3, right? Didn't we go to the...
I have not played.
Oh, okay. Mirror's I went Edge to the booth Catalyst. And played it. And I'm surprised that it's going to be more open.
Must have been some other handsome thing. Boy.
Open world, yeah. It's open world game this time out.
I think it looks great. I think it looks gorgeous. I think it's one of those games that was critically successful, commercially kind of so-so, and I'm just happy that we're getting a sequel at all.
And surprised, right?
Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned it's critical versus its commercial success, because our listener Chris Parker writes us at the email address gamescoop@ign.com, just like you can. And he says, I'm a huge Mirror's Edge fan. I'm super stoked about the sequel, prequel, reboot, whatever it is, which is coming out. However, I am curious as it flew somewhat under the radar at release, didn't sell particularly well, and is now getting a reboot. This begs the question, what are some other games which get this resurgence that have succeeded upon resurgence? The only example of this I can think of is Borderlands, where the first had a somewhat cultish following with Under the Radar Press, but has resurged since then with 2 and the pre-sequel and Tales from the...
Yeah, well, Borderlands has definitely grown, but the first Borderlands was a big hit.
Yeah, it was
a big hit. I got one. Call of Duty.
How so?
I don't think the first Call of Duty game was a huge masterpiece hit that everybody cared about.
Yeah, I mean, 1, 2, really and 3 were big deals, but not in the way that, like, you know, they weren't selling 10 to 20 million copies.
Yeah, I think Modern Warfare was the big one.
That was a big turning point.
That was a big deal.
How did Assassin's Creed sell, the original?
I don't have the numbers, but it definitely, like, 2 was the one where it really, like, took off.
2's where it just blew up.
Well, 2 is the one where it was also really good.
I think Assassin's Creed kind of blew up.
What's that?
I think Assassin's Creed.
That's what I wondered. I wasn't sure. I remembered everybody was talking about it. I didn't know if it actually sold.
I got one. Red Steel.
Oh, there.
Yeah.
Red Steel 2.
It's good. Red Steel 2 was good.
So we exclusive.
It was strange that it got a sequel, too.
The question is it stuff that, like, went away for a while and then came back?
I think the question is games that you didn't expect them to get a sequel.
Oh, yeah.
But did.
That's definitely Red Steel.
I mean, there's stuff like System Shock is back and big, and the first two games were fairly hardcore, you know, experiences that not a lot of people played. Then we got BioShock and its sequels, and now we're getting another System Shock. So I put that out there. Deus Ex, you know, all that sort of... I mean, XCOM, all that PC stuff is sort of back...
Super Metroid comes to mind. When Metroid came out, it was popular here in the States, but then it got like a Game Boy sequel, and I kind of thought that thing was just, you know, going to be over, and then boom, we get the best version of it afterward.
And the last Metroid was in captivity, and the galaxy was at peace.
There was that.
So how do you make a game with that going on?
What about the baby?
A few that came to my mind, was anyone expecting a sequel to Nier to be announced at E3 last summer?
No, that was real weird.
At the Square Enix press conference? But we are getting a new Nier game. Mm-hmm. The Ryan Clements of the world are excited. Psychonauts.
Oh yeah, that was a shocker.
There is a new Psychonauts.
Did not see that coming.
Yeah, a cult favorite from the Xbox, PlayStation 2.
To some extent, though, like, I feel like we should expect anything to get a sequel, because I think studios really or publishers really pressure people to make sequels over other things.
Yeah, I think that's true.
And so, that's a problem, right? I know people get frustrated working on the fourth version of a game then when they just want to make their own thing.
Mm-hmm. I think so. There are really good reasons behind that, right? Like, developers and publishers spend a lot of time and money building an IP, building a world, creating assets, and then when that's out, they could either do that all again, or they could use all that they've already made to make something in a shorter amount of time. Mm-hmm. Plus, we know that sequels tend to sell better.
Yeah, I mean, even if you're making an entirely new game, like it's very it's a sequel, but it's gonna have very little to do with the original. You still get to skip the months that you spend planning out the world and mm-hmm. who your character is gonna be and what voice actors are you gonna use and all that sort of logistic stuff you get to reuse, even if the game is completely different than what came before it. Yeah, so it's there's a lot of inertia once something comes out and is even a mild success to just keep it going.
Mm-hmm. Chrono Trigger rights holders, take note.
I like the trend that nothing really goes away. Nothing that you like and is at least modestly successful. Like, even things like Joss Whedon is a big fan of, like Buffy is still around in comic book form, mm-hmm. and Firefly, and Avatar, and like things like that continue getting graphic novels and comics.
So. Yeah, like, how surprised would you be if you heard Buffy's being rebooted for Netflix?
Yeah, I wouldn't be that surprised.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't.
Think of it, there was a time in which there was a Star Trek TV show, and then there was 10 years in which there was nothing Star Trek, but mm-hmm. conventions started, and people watched old episodes, and they're around, and then a movie just happened, and then it became, there was a two-decade period where there wasn't a Star Trek on TV.
Now
there
TV
isn't
show.
One,
yeah.
But it just got announced.
Yeah. Yeah, you think about sequel gaps between Fantasia and Fantasia 2000, you get a gap of close to 60 years.
2,000 years.
I don't remember Fantasia 2000. Is that a whole new movie?
That was a whole new movie, mm-hmm. theatrical release.
It had CG.
And it was really bad.
Yeah.
Depending on your substance.
What about the game?
I didn't play the game.
Nobody did.
There was a game?
RIP.
Was there really a game?
Yeah.
In 2000?
Oh, that. Oh, yeah. No.
Like last
are you thinking
No,
of
you're talking about the Kinect game, right?
Oh, yeah, you're talking about that one.
The harmonics game.
Yeah, I thought that'd be funny if there was a PlayStation 1 game.
Was there a Fantasia game in the 16-bit era?
No, there's a bunch of Mickey games where's the Magic Kingdom?
Okay, that's
and there's the 8-bit Magic Kingdom game.
One more before we move on. In 2008, was anyone expecting a new Bionic Commando game from Capcom?
That's a great choice. Yeah, and then you had
there's the Game Boy Color.
Grin's terrible game, but then you had that wonderful Bionic Commando Rearmed.
Yep.
That they also did.
Yeah, I mean, you just opened the door. Bionic Commando Rearmed reminded me of Pac-Man Championship Edition, and then they gave the Galaga one's underrated. People don't seem to like it as much.
I like the Galaga.
Yeah, me too.
Although the name escapes me. Is it just Galaga DX?
It's called Legions.
Galaga Legions. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's a great game. You're right, Justin. Also, Space Invaders Extreme from that generation.
Yep.
Another mm-hmm. really great. I didn't think you could make a good Space Invaders.
I really
sequel.
Liked all those updates.
I mean, retro games get brought back surprisingly obscure ones all the time because people snatch up bundles of rights, and then it's just surprising. Like Paperboy could just reappear, but it wouldn't reappear from Atari. We don't really know who has Paperboy right now. I'd have to research that. But there's certain games that people would definitely want to bring back, and they research it. I actually talked to the guys that brought back Burger Time about how they came about those rights.
With World Tour, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting. Data East hasn't existed for years, and they had to kind of just go down a rabbit hole finding the licenses, and they got it. People do that.
Sam, what do you think about this? Paperboy VR.
Ooh.
How do you make Paperboy harder?
Would you play that?
Yeah, I would be very excited about the obstacle course at the end.
Yeah, there's no good. That breakdancer swerving around Ooh. Him.
Game's so hard.
Get a stationary bike.
Yeah.
Oh, it's really good.
Sells itself. Let's move on. Our next email comes from Johnny in the UK. He says, love the show. I hope Jared's Dance of Joy now becomes a world woad meme.
But I couldn't get you to do it in the last episode, right? Well,
got him to do it right here.
Now we can't get him to stop.
Yeah. Johnny UK says, I saw the IGN article about BioWare asking fans if they'd like a tactic-style Dragon Age game. Did you guys see this?
Oh.
The creative director on Dragon Age just tweeted out, if we made a Dragon Age tactic-style game, would you guys be interested in it?
Okay, so if I remember right, didn't Origins launch with a web-based tactics game.
There were a few they made. There were a few spin-off games that appeared on the web. Uh-huh. There was one that was sort of a story-driven, almost like a choose-your-own-adventure book.
Right.
There was one. They had a Facebook game that had a hexagon grid. Right, that had a tactics game.
That's what I'm thinking about. Game. Yeah, it was actually pretty good, if I remember right.
It was good.
So yes, I love this idea.
Sure. I love tactics games. Final Fantasy Tactics, Fire Emblem, mm-hmm. Those types of games. So
Front Mission.
Front Mission for sure. Another game that could maybe be brought back.
Disgaea?
Yeah, well, I was going to say that.
The one thing about Dragon
later,
Age is that we do have a lot of fantasy-based tactics games. And like, I mean, I don't know if that'd be my
first
choice.
We're not like drowning in them.
Yeah,
like, there's
not
Fire
really
Emblem
like
right
XCOM's like
everyone
a big
I play has dragons in it and swords.
He says, it's an interesting idea. I'm sure they can make it work. He says, it reminded me of something I've been discussing with friends for a while. How great would a Mass Effect game using the XCOM system be?
Yeah.
All the skills, classes, biotics would lend themselves perfectly to the style.
Yeah.
I was wondering what well-known games you guys would like to see explored in different game systems.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of stuff like that. They made a, I don't remember if it was a Flash game or it came out on DS or something, but they made a 2D Mirror's Edge. That was really good. No, it came out on mobile.
The Runner.
And it was really good. Like, it was great.
Classic examples include Puzzle Quest. It's a great marriage of different genres. Nintendo does this all the time with like Mario Kart and Smash Brothers.
Somebody made this very clever Team Fortress remake that was 2D called Gang Garrison a while ago, and that was pretty wonderful. It actually worked. I mean, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I love D-makes.
So one of the ones that I think of, and I think this has come up in other IGN programs, is I'd love to play a Marvel Universe-based tactics game. Like a
Marvel
Final
Universe.
Fantasy Tactics. I don't want it to look modern. I want it to have little sprites.
You have each character is an individual hero or villain, and they have their own abilities.
Exactly. Team superhero battles are
really
kind of fit perfectly into that squad versus squad setting. And you mentioned, Freedom Force versus...
You know, Pokemon Conquest was a Pokemon tactics game, and it's really good.
What system is that on?
DS.
I never played that one.
It's so fun. And, like, you have to use just like Fire Emblem with the weapon triangle, you have to use people's abilities or Pokemon's abilities against each other.
That sounds really good.
I'd like a Pokemon, big, beautiful open world console game.
Really good. Just like any genre bending in general, like I'm a big fan of. The game I've brought it up on GameScoop before, but the much maligned Shadowrun first person shooter for the Xbox 360. Was a great game, but it just wasn't what people wanted at Shadowrun, and so it caught, it was sort of a doomed from the moment it launched.
That game was actually, looking back, ahead of its time.
Way ahead of its time.
A multiplayer-only game in 2007.
Very, very class interdependent, with all these unique, crazy classes. I mean, it was a hero shooter before that term had been coined. I'm a big fan of, Johnny said, tactics versions of games. I mean, I'll play a tactics version of almost anything.
Yeah.
BioShock,
One that occurred to me was...
BioShock would be cool.
Resident Evil Tactics.
Ooh.
Yeah.
It just flows off the tongue.
You have your arenas, and there's two win conditions. You can either escape, you're surrounded by zombies. You can either escape or kill all the zombies.
Good, yeah.
A member of your party gets eaten, they turn into one of the zombies, and it's all playing out turn-based. That sounds awesome.
Doom RPG was really good.
I played that on mobile, and it was great.
Yeah, I played on DS, I think it was
good. What's the stop-and-go puzzle game that everybody's playing right now?
Stop-and-go puzzle game.
Yeah, you throw guns at dudes, and you get their guns and shoot.
Super Hot
reminds me of Doom RPG in a tiniest way, because of that turn-by-turn thing, the way your character moves.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. What about a 2D Metroidvania-style Shadow of the Colossus?
Yes.
So you're exploring maps and stuff, but then you get to the boss, and you have to platform up to the top of the boss to stab in the head.
Yeah, so and the boss gives you some ability that you can use to reach a previously unreachable area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you can kind of see the boss in the distance, like lumbering around sometimes, and you have to get your Metroidvania over there.
I want a Mario game that goes back to the Mario 2 mechanics. Very badly.
A Mario Maker.
A Mario game where you go back. Or a Mario Maker mode, that'd be even better, but where you could make everything.
So you want Galaxy, but with turnips.
So you can hop on things' heads and
pick them up.
Build on that and pick them up.
Can't you do that?
Yeah. No, that's...
Is that the only Mario game you can do that in?
Yeah.
Well, you can pick up turtle shells in a lot of games.
But there's no...
They should make Super Mario Bros. 2 2.
Yes. That's what I want.
I wouldn't put it past into
that. It would be Super Mario Advance 5, Super Mario 2 2.
It's true. I have a couple more to run by you guys. How about Burnout Kart?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. A Burnout Kart racer that uses the crash mechanics.
Yep. I believe that.
You're on board with that one?
Yep. Yeah.
I don't know about Justin. Justin's...
I just want a Burnout game where you do the puzzle stuff.
I mean, my immediate thought was that Burnout's already pretty arcadey, but like to even amp that up, could be cool.
Here's the one that I really, really like, though, and that as soon as I thought of it, I was really mad that it doesn't exist and I can't play it. A Mario platformer roguelike, like Rogue Legacy, where you go into randomly generated Bowser's castles, and the castle is like very like complex and intricate, and you make it as far as you can, but then when you die, you keep all the coins you collected, so you can upgrade your abilities, spend the coins to upgrade your abilities, go back into a new randomly generated castle, you make it a little bit farther each time.
That's the logical progression of Mario Maker.
I really like that idea.
The roguelike Mario.
A Mario platformer roguelike.
They can do stuff like that as an endless runner. They had Yoshi's... It's this weird DS launch game called Yoshi's Touch and Go that I think about all the time, actually, because I really love
it. You fall for a while, and then you move to the right for a while, and it starts over. It's an arcade game, basically.
It's a great use of the stylus, where Yoshi's walking on his own, and you have to draw paths for him and like stun enemies.
They did a lot of stuff. They did Kirby games like that.
Yeah.
Miranda and Callie have this idea for a dating sim starring video game characters. Mm-hmm. So like you can, it's like the high school thing, but you're in high school with like Master Chief.
Yeah, video game high school.
Yeah, like and you're just, it's a dating sim. So you have all the archetypes, but they're all based on characters from other games.
That sounds good.
It's great.
I think that'd be fun.
Would play. All right, let's get these things greenlit. Moving on, this is Ryan. He says, recently I've been playing a lot of The Witcher 3 and starting to really enjoy that feeling of powering up my character and plowing through enemies in areas that used to fill me with dread. It's an age-old gaming mechanism, but one that somehow never feels old. My question to you guys is, which game brings back the strongest memories of powering up your character to unlimited power, said in a Darth Sidious voice, and sheer glee? For me, and spoilers, it was the moment at the end of Half-Life 2 when your gravity gun was accidentally upgraded and you got the power to throw everything, including enemies, around the world. It was a good moment.
I like that one.
Games,
they're so limiting every time that happens, though. To become powerful. A god in a game, you're always so limited.
Yeah. For mine, it's playing the original Legend of Zelda, and before you do anything else, go and collecting the maximum number of heart containers, grabbing the blue ring, upgrading to the white sword, buying the magic shield.
You can do all that before you do the first temple?
Yeah, you can do all that without going into the first dungeon. So it's kind of wonderful. You can bomb for two of the heart containers, you can burn for a third, that gets you to six, which you need for the white sword, you can get enough rupees to get the blue ring and the shield.
He writes strategy guides.
Yeah, sorry. So anyway,
for work.
By the time you start the game and go down into the first dungeon, you're like this like Katamari of Death. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful Katamari feeling. I stole that from somebody. I don't remember who said
it. But are you saying like by the end of the game, you're like, it's just a cool moment because it's super powerful?
It doesn't necessarily have to be the end of the game, but games that give you that moment where you feel all-powerful.
You know what gives you that moment? Game Genie. I was just reminiscing about Game Genie the other day with Damon, and man, when you first got that, you could finally jump over the flag in Mario.
Mm-hmm.
It finally wasn't a lie on the playground anymore. I was telling you too, like I played Final Fantasy III with game from like EGM codes for Game Genie, and they give you like you can start with whatever HP, but then you get this weapon, the Atma weapon, that's based on your HP, and you're just like all powerful, and you can hit eight times with the Genji glove and everything. It's 9999999 each time. It's so great.
It is so great. Dave Barry took his kid to Japan once, and when they were there, they went to Nintendo headquarters.
Who's Dave Barry?
The humorist. I'm sorry, he's a writer and columnist. And his kid is asking the Nintendo executives in like '88 about Game Genie. He's like, he wants to know about Game Genie, and nobody had a clue what he was talking about. He was in Japan, and
they probably had a meeting. They're like, don't acknowledge Game Genie.
Exactly. And so this little kid's just like, do you have Game Genie? And they're all like, what is Game Genie? Like, he's meeting with the highest level executives in the company.
Justin, you got anything?
Yeah, I got a couple. I don't know that it's literally the first time I felt this way, but like the strongest memory for me is like Super Metroid. Like when I picture that game now, it's usually like with the spacer and like the ice beam and like sort of the spin jump and all that. But you start that game with like a pea shooter, and even in Metroid 1, it doesn't even go all the way across the screen. It stops like right in front of you. Yeah. So to get all those power-ups, like it's become like such a trope in video game now, like the Metroidvania, but it was a newer thing, especially in a 2D platformer back then, to get... Like, you were firing missiles and super missiles and power bombs and, your beams going everywhere and you can jump all over the place. And that's, like, so different than how you start the game.
Hmm.
It's a great feeling.
What about Fierce Deity, Link? That was a good one.
Yeah.
The Majora's Mask.
Oh, my gosh.
Get that hyper beam at the very end of Super Metroid. My other thing is just RPGs in general. I used to have...
Yeah, since... just by the very nature of, like, leveling up.
Just so much more time. Like, you're just a kid. I was made of time. And I would, like, grind to, like, such a ridiculous... I would grind to the point where I could just kill everything in one hit just because it felt so good to do it.
Yeah, it's like finding the Masamune at the end of Final Fantasy I. You know, you're there in the final dungeon, and if you go down that long
corridor, your white mage finally pays off.
I always give it to my white mage.
Yeah, you give it to the white mage, and suddenly you're like, I am a god! It's
I never thought about that in Final Fantasy I. You can just go back to the starting area and just steamroll over imps.
Oh, yeah, you can.
I never did that.
You never did that?
No. And like with RPGs now, you usually can't because the enemies scale. Yeah. What's up with enemy scaling?
Yeah, I don't like that either.
No, it's
the best kind of scaling is a little bit elastic, where it's like this area is level 1 to 7, and this area is level 8 to 10. So there's some rubber banding to stick with you, but then you can still steamroll stuff by the end of the game.
The game that made me feel powerful that sticks out in my mind is G. Darius on PlayStation, which is a 2D space shooter. Darius is a long-running
I've played Darius Twin.
Space series. This is G. Darius. And you can upgrade your ship just like you can in most shooters. But in here you have this beam that's like as big as your ship, but you can also absorb the enemy's beams. And if you absorb it long enough, you can upgrade your beam so it's the entire width of of your television screen. Mm-hmm. Just like obliterating everything in your path for like 5 seconds.
On one side of the screen? And
And it's just... Yeah.
That's really,
really
good.
That's great. Yeah, that was really, really fun.
Were you not going to name drop Disgaea there too?
I was also going to say Disgaea. I mean, that game is all about leveling up your characters and unleashing ridiculous special moves, dealing tens of thousands of hit points.
You just have millions of damage by the
end. Do they just add zeros on hit points? Like,
yeah, it's like...
I mean, it happens pretty steadily, though. Like, they don't cheat it. It's not like, hey, you were doing 100 damage, now you're doing 10,000 damage. Like, it is pretty slow and steady. I'm playing Disgaea 5 right now.
Are you? Our next email comes from Bon Turkington.
Whoa.
He says, "Hi, Damon and the Scoop crew. I hope this week finds you well." Have you been found well?
I'm pretty well.
I'm all right.
Yeah. You can find me well all the time.
This will likely be seen as another landmark year for gaming, as two new technologies are going to be fully implemented. I'm talking about VR and Nintendo's NX, both of which continue to evolve how games are played and interacted with. Books, and to a lesser extent movies, do not really change over time. A book, as a collection of words between pages, will never really become obsolete, and movies will almost always involve passively watching a show. 100 years from now, books and movies will still be just as enjoyable as they are now. However, can the same be said about games? I'm wondering if you think there will come a point in the near future, say another 20 years, where we simply won't be able to go back and play old games from the NES, Super NES, or even PS3 and beyond because VR and other technology of the day has completely eclipsed them.
So there's this real smart dude named C.S. Lewis who said that reading old books is very valuable because it's kind of like traveling through time. You read an old book, and you can read something from the context of a generation that doesn't exist anymore. You can look into their brains and see how they saw the world in a different way than you see the world. They had different assumptions. Old games can do the same thing. You go back and play a game from the 1970s, early 1980s, and you see that people were thinking in different ways. And I think that's the greatest strength of old games, this sort of magical time capsule ability. Just like looking at the stars and seeing light from something that may not even be there anymore, it's sort of the same sort of experience.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely Turkey Man. Turkey Man.
Yep. Justin, will video games stand the test of time?
Yeah, I mean, I actually think Turkington makes a great point, and this is something that I've thought a lot about, is I really, really like video games. I've made my career playing video games, so I believe in this medium. But they definitely have strange, I don't know if it's disadvantages, but the technology changing, I mean, I guess it's really defined like what a movie is. Like it's, 90 minutes to 3 hours, and you're going to sit in a theater and you're going to watch this film. And like there's a common understanding of like how long a book will be. But a video game can be, a 99-cent, it can be Super Hexagon, or it can be a 100-hour RPG. And those both fit into, those are both counted as video games. And we cover both of those on IGN. And they couldn't possibly be more different, from visual novels to things that have literally no story at all. Mm-hmm. And nothing else is like that. Like, books don't have that problem. Albums don't have that problem. Maybe it's not a problem. Maybe it's an opportunity. But it's interesting to think about just how reliant we are on the technology of the day. And people will argue that films are like that, too. But it's not the same. Like, a movie from the 50s is still commonly understood as a movie, whereas a video game... from the Atari era just has nothing in common almost from a video game, from The Witcher 3. So it's interesting. I don't really know what that means for the long-term future of games.
It's interesting that he brings up VR. I just finished Ready Player One, and that talks about a VR-centric universe where everybody's living in VR, but they go play old arcade games as part of
in VR.
What happens in the game. So it's an emulation within. But that brings me to my point. Games are incredibly hard to preserve. We're doing a terrible job at it. Mm. And when you play an emulated game, you play a preserved game right now, I don't think it's the experience that people ever got with that game. Sitting on the CRT screen with an NES plugged in is the way to play Super Mario Brothers or DuckTales. It's very hard for me to connect that experience with emulating it on any other device, mm-hmm. and that is, like, people say, like, well, that's you can do that with any Xbox controller and a PC, whatever. You cannot do that with the vast majority of arcade machines in any way. Mm-hmm. There's no way to take a 720 cabinet and make it experienceable for people now without making it that cabinet.
And it's really sad. Or even just the look and feel of a joystick, or even, I mean, even
or
something
the screen.
As simple.
The graphics are very important, and the screens are all wrong.
I mean, that actually touches on, you know, the point that I was making about, you know, being reliant on, like, video games are reliant on input in a way that no other artistic medium is. So, you know, you can emulate Mario on your PC, and, you know,
or think about it on your iPhone.
Yeah, or on your iPhone, and you can even add. I mean, even if you have a great physical controller, it's not an NES controller, and so it's different. Mm-hmm. It is a subtly different experience, and that's just a weird thing that you know, that no other medium really has to deal with or contend with. And I completely agree that I am concerned about the preservation of games, and actually laws sort of make the preservation of games difficult. I think that's kind of backwards. And even outside of just the legal ramifications, you know, MMOs go offline. And these are these real important experiences that sometimes thousands or That's hundreds good, of thousands of people had, and they're just gone. Like, you can't, or even, and I feel like I brought this up on Scoop maybe a month or so ago, but even games that are still online, like World of Warcraft Cataclysm, changed it, wiped away the old world. That was that was the whole conceit of that expansion, was it wiped away the old world and replaced all the zones with new, you know, it pushed the story forward a few years. And it's like, it made me uncomfortable because now you can't experience
that. Yeah, think
old
of the equipment it would take to resurrect it too, is all dated server equipment.
I mean, fan-made attempts have been, like, you can, like, they are preserving that stuff, but that's sort of outside the law. So people are doing it, but not in any kind of official sanctioned way. And I don't think I'm okay with that.
Yeah, that's something that people have been fighting for rights for, special allowances this year, actually, for cases almost exactly like what you're describing. That's a constant fight that people have to make to say, you know, what preservation versus business. And unfortunately, and I do think it's unfortunate, the almighty dollar does kind of rule in these situations. Yeah. And people are very protective of their intellectual property. I want people to be able to profit off what they've created.
But, absolutely.
But at the expense of losing something that was art, that is art, for the sake of the human race, we need to lean a little more on the side of what you said, preservation.
I don't know if that story is apocryphal or not, but didn't Nintendo lose the Donkey Kong source code?
We don't know if that's
true. We don't know if they lost it or
they outsourced it and somebody else might own that code. Because they never reissue it. I mean, the thing that would prove us wrong is if Nintendo just put it out.
The original arcade Donkey Kong.
The vertical monitor Donkey Kong that asks how high can you get.
They may have it, but it may belong to somebody else. There's a lot of possibilities. But
think about this. Games were played on a one picture tube, a CRT screen, for the entire life of games until 2005. Mm-hmm. And those are no longer in production anywhere.
The CRT?
Yeah, anywhere. You have to refurbish an old one to do that. So the way every game was designed to look, if we think of games as art and as a visual medium, the way DuckTales looks on a CRT screen was designed so Scrooge's eyes blur the right way using the CRT monitor, so it looks like a cartoon character. Mm. But anytime you play it on a virtual console, it's the jagged little pixel boxes, and we all wear like clothes with like pixel art and stuff. Like pixel art didn't exist.
It didn't look like pixels, exactly. And
the
other
GameScoop
logo. And it's not just pixel art that suffers from that. You think about something like Super Mario RPG that had those pre-rendered sprites in it, and you look at them on a modern TV and you're just like, ugh.
What's going
on? But when
on
they
there?
Were all softened,
they look like clay softened
models.
Yeah,
they kind of look like models.
And they try to cover off on stuff like that with software, and none of it's really that great.
And I appreciate the efforts that people make in that, though. I mean,
anyway, game preservation, we're screwed.
Is there anything stopping someone at some point in the future from manufacturing CRT monitors again?
No, there's
money.
Nothing.
Profit.
It'd be a little crazy.
It's not like the materials you need to make them are gone.
But I restore these old games all the time and old pinball machines, and people manufacture insane parts for those.
It's the hardware side and the software side, and both are problematic. The software side is at least solvable. there's weird stuff around, like, I come from a mobile games background, and, like, remember old flip phones would have, like, mm-hmm. games on them? And, like, I'm not saying that those games are huge artistic achievements, and it's important. It's just weird to me that they're gone. Mm-hmm. It's weird to me that they're gone.
Not archived.
And they just don't, like, John Romero made games for flip phones.
Yeah.
And, like, they just don't exist anywhere anymore, and no one seems to really care that
And think about them. The pre-updated versions of Xbox Live games. I mean, yep. I mean, there's archivists that believe that all of that needs to be archived for various reasons. We went to a talk from the Internet Archive where at GDC last year, where they talked about how game code for games that never came out never gets out unless somebody steals it from work.
Yeah, they were just like, please steal from work. It was amazing. But God bless those guys, because they have made a huge effort with the resources they have available to collect and save as much as they can, something they continue to do. I encourage everybody to support that. But that raises another issue. You were talking about the hardware, and even if this stuff does become accessible again, there's also the threshold of expense and accessibility. I mean, the more this becomes a boutique industry, how do we pay for it? How do we get it into people's hands so they can explore the history? That's the other half of it.
Yeah, I think it needs to be like a Library of Congress movement, and that's just not happening. Yeah.
I do want to say that part of this is we think it's unique to games, and I even said a minute ago that it's unique to games, but there are challenges. People that are just as into books as we are into games. It wasn't until, like, Kindles have been around for years, but until super recently, the Kindle software didn't try to emulate. It would put line breaks in weird places, and it wasn't, I don't even know enough about novels to really have the vocabulary to articulate this point thoroughly, except that the way that words are laid out on a printed page is different than how they would appear on a Kindle.
Yes.
And it wasn't until the most recent Amazon Kindle update that they made an effort to finally fix that and have it look more like, authorial
that's interesting.
Intent.
Yeah. I mean, books always say, like, who did the typesetting and stuff still. Like, that's, like, a popular thing.
Like, they finally fixed the typesetting on Kindles for big bookies. And, I'm sure...
Bookies.
Like, I'm sure people...
Bookers.
Like,
bookers,
you know, it's probably not radically different than seeing a film on film. You know, there are these concerns in other mediums, but I think they're definitely amplified and multiplied in video games.
That's true. Yep. It will be very, very interesting to see what happens with VR. Whether or not that changes the way we play games.
Can a Donkey Kong machine be emulated so perfectly in VR that it's indistinguishable from real life? Of course, that will happen. But who's going to do that?
Yeah.
And what will that look like? And who can license it? And
I don't know, but when they do, I shall play it a lot.
But that's what Ready Player One is about, which is going to be a Steven Spielberg movie.
Yeah, that's true. It begins this year. We'll see what happens with
it begins.
Justin, how are you doing on time? You have 2 minutes. Let me read this email because it concerns you.
Okay.
And then you can bounce before we do video game 20 questions.
But we need him for 20 questions.
I know. So. Just ask a silly question at the start.
Ask
and you'll be fine.
He's wearing a hat.
Like if the character's parents love
this him. This email comes from our fan Blake. He says, I've been a dedicated listener to your podcast for close to 2 years now. It's one of the highlights of my week. You guys have the most intelligent, funny, thoughtful, and entertaining commentary on video games anywhere.
Thank you, Blake.
That's very nice of you to say.
I've also been a big fan of the History of Awesome series.
Oh, great.
I wanted to thank you especially for two recent discussions that were prompted by reader email. The first was a graduate student who lamented how large his backlog has become while he is in school. As someone who has spent the past 6 years on an educational path to becoming first a registered nurse and then a nurse practitioner, and working part-time and full-time during my education, this conversation resonated with me greatly. I have dozens of games on my shelf that I've bought, but never been able to play due to school and work commitments, including such renowned AAA titles as Oblivion, Skyrim, Fallout 3 and New Vegas, Mass Effect Trilogy, GTA 4, Twilight Princess, Skyward Sword, Xenoblade Chronicles X, etc.
Blake is going to have a lot of fun. We can play games
again. I often feel like the only gamer who has not been able to stay abreast of modern games due to real-world endeavors, but this conversation was a great reminder that I am not alone in struggling to find time to play.
It's cool to be able to get all those games, too. I mean, when I was a kid, I wasn't able to, and it's nice to be able to play. I have too much to play. It's great.
The other conversation I really enjoyed was from a reader who said that he has been criticized for maintaining such a childish hobby into his 30s. Justin brought up the point that video games can be art. Table's going crazy. But can just as easily be juvenile and crass. This was refreshing to hear. I often want to make the case to non-gamers that the best video games can stand alongside the best works in film, theater, and music, but games like Mortal Kombat X and Call of Duty make it difficult. Kudos to Justin for admitting that as much as we all love video games, they often earn their adolescent reputation.
Yeah, I mean, I have a vivid memory of, I was on an airplane, I think flying to E3 or something, it might have been flying out to GDC before I lived here, and I was young, I was new to the industry, I was probably 24, and there's an older lady sitting next to me, oh, what are you on the airplane for? And I said, oh, I'm going out for a video game convention. And she said, you know, I don't like those video games. There's that game where you can have sex with a hooker and then beat her to death and then take her money from her. And, like, I felt like I didn't want to defend that. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, you know. And, like, you can say, well, the game's rated M and kids shouldn't be playing it. And the player had to make the choice to do that. You know, it's not like that's part of the story. But I was just like, I remember that vividly. And I'm just like, yeah, you know.
It's a valuable life lesson.
I'm like, yeah, that sucks, you know. And, like, I definitely understood the argument I could have made, but I just didn't want to defend video games in that moment. Yeah. Like,
didn't want to talk about systemic game making where people can create their own combinations.
Yeah, the average age of the gamer is 30, and then, you know, all that. Yeah. I just didn't,
And I actually like Mortal Kombat, but I probably wouldn't make the argument that it's high art.
No, but they are certainly, you know, I don't know, Journey's one of my favorite games.
Try selling an old person on a comic book career sometime. I'm sure it's equally as
difficult.
That's true. All right, Justin, if you have to go.
Yeah, cool. I'm sorry. Right. Ask if they wear a hat.
Okay.
Okay, cool. See ya.
All right, this is the time when we play Video Game 20 Questions. This is where we take a suggestion from you, the listener or viewer, and I'm the only person who knows the game, and now Jared and Sam have 20 questions to guess this mystery game. And for the rest of this month, we're also giving the person who suggested the game a Fallout 4 prize pack brought to you by Subpack. So that one's going to John C.
Excellent. Cena?
John Cena?
Just John C.
Okay. Could it be John Cena?
It could be. For all we know, it's John Cena.
Before we begin, I don't know what to do with this couch.
You're doing a good job, man.
Don't worry about the couch. Focus on the game.
All right. A little worried.
We have more room to dance. Just think of it that way.
That's it. All right.
You may begin.
Let's see. Well, Justin's not here, so I'm not going to ask about hats. Not yet, anyway.
That leaves it up to me.
Was this game released after January 1st, 2000?
No.
Oh,
yes.
All right. We're in our safe zone here.
Same question, 1990.
Was it after or before?
After 1990.
No.
Okay. So we're even earlier. All right. Do you think it's even worth asking after 80?
Was this in the arcades? Was this an arcade game?
No.
Oh, not an arcade game.
So PC or console or handheld?
Was it based on a licensed property?
No.
Okay. So we got an unlicensed 80s home computer.
Oh, it could be 70s, unfortunately.
Oh, it could be 70s.
That's even need to narrow it?
But there wouldn't. Most of that would be.
Was this on Nintendo?
No.
Not Nintendo.
I mean, not. Originally, no.
Okay.
It sounds like it's Sid Meier's Pirates.
Was this a computer game?
No.
Oh.
Not originally.
It wasn't arcade, Nintendo.
And it wasn't
computer. So it sounds like it could be a Master System game.
It could be Master System. It could be technically BTG-16. It could be...
was this a console game?
Yes.
Okay. Right. So.
Oh, it could be... Oh, wait. It could be an early Atari game.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Was this game released on the Atari 2600?
Yes.
There we go.
Ooh.
Oh, there we go. The fun is back. Oh, yes, siree. Yeah. It's the 2600 from Atari.
Are you a human in this game?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. You're a human? It's an Atari game?
It's about an adventure.
Was this game developed by Activision?
Yes.
Ah.
10.
Does this game have crocodiles in it?
Yes.
Oh, wait, don't. We could be a sequel, though.
All right. Let's keep it going.
Okay. Is this the first game in a series?
Yes.
Ah.
Are you sure they weren't alligators?
What?
The crocodiles I asked about.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not sure about that. You can either spin more questions.
Or we can just guess it.
Is this game Pitfall?
It is. Thank you for pronouncing it correctly with an exclamation point.
I hear the room
point.
Shaking a little
Excellent.
Bit.
Pitfall, developed and published by Activision for the Atari 2600 in 1982.
That David Crane, though.
It is a single-player platformer.
It is.
Jared's played poker with the creator of Pitfall.
Yeah, it was fun. He's a good card player, too.
Jared lost all his money to the creator.
Yeah. Apparently.
No comment.
Thank you for the suggestion, John C. Nuh. Before we go, what are we playing this weekend?
Oh, great question.
I know you're playing.
Yeah, I'm playing Mega Man Legacy Collection on 3DS until I finish it for review, and then I'm playing The Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess HD Remake, my favorite Zelda game, and I do believe, in my humble critical opinion, the best Zelda of them all.
I already played it. It's still mediocre.
You say that with a straight face.
I do. I really
like,
love
I'm
that
not,
game.
I will not argue that it's good or that you enjoy it, but...
Sure.
that it's the best Zelda game ever made.
I think it improves on Ocarina in almost every way. I think the overworld and the dungeons are beautifully laid out. No, go for it. No,
it's fine. Sam, what are you playing?
I do think it's better than Okami.
Yeah, I like it more than Okami.
I'm playing Fire Emblem Fates, the special edition with the three versions in it. I'm still in the first version. Something.
Are you going to play all three of them?
What's it called?
I don't know.
It's not Conquest or Revelation.
Is it? It's not
Selling. Birthright. It's called Birthright.
Yeah.
Are you going to play all three?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, okay. I love that that's going to be in my 3DS from like now until the end of the year, probably.
Yeah.
And I'll play other games around it, but it'll always be there. And Fire Emblem is such a good game to stretch over a long period
of time. Yeah, it's really good. Mm-hmm. I'm saving that for like a trip, but a nice long plane ride.
Yeah.
It's a long trip.
Well, I don't really play my 3DS at home. So.
Yeah.
Man, I do, and it hurts my hand.
Yeah.
What are you playing this weekend?
I'm on mission 42 of Metal Gear Solid 5.
Oh, that's right.
So hopefully I can wrap that up at some point. But I think even
after
I'm
done, you gotta go back and get.
I want to go back, like
get the optional objectives.
Yeah.
Those are fun, but S ranking is even more fun.
I love that game. Yeah. And I also want to start Far Cry Primal.
Big
Far Cry fan.
That looks fun.
That looks like a lot of fun. Yes.
It's beautiful too.
All right, I think that's all the scoops we have for you this week. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address gamescoop@ign.com. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Jared. Thank you, Sam. My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop, and we're out.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season two even more memorable together.